Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will indeed encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today, I have a return guest by the name of Ken Ungerich. He's written a book called God Theories, and he says that he believes he can prove the existence of God. And it's an amazing thing. I've had him on the show before. He's now living in northern Minnesota. He was raised on a small dairy farm there. He graduated from college in 68 and taught high school science for 7 years before moving to Baltimore in 1975, where he took a 2-year course in electronic engineering. Since then, he's been a trainer and engineer in various aspects of the electronics industry. He's very excited because he retired recently and moved back to Minnesota, as I mentioned, to help his brother continue the farm, run the farm that he grew up on, and do some traveling, hopefully play some golf, and renew some important relationships that he's maintained from the place that he always considered to be home. While teaching and engineering have been his life's professions, his passion has been an open search for greater understanding of the spiritual aspect of who we are. And today we're going to explore that at all levels. If we have some callers, we certainly welcome call-ins and hope that you will expand your own consciousness. He's explored that facet of our existence, at least on a cursory level, and from as many ways of doing that as there are. The process has led him to conclude that there are great spiritual truths that can be found in virtually every religion, as well as from the fields of metaphysics, philosophy, and science. But there are also many ideas from each of these sources that are mutually exclusive and therefore cannot be true for that reason alone. This world is full of paradoxes, folks. Ken finally says that he thinks it's important for us to try and do a better job of sorting out those that are truth from those that are not. So, Ken, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, David. And you are the same.
Absolutely. Why would anybody choose to be any other way? And we have that capacity to make it a great day each day, and it can always get better.
Yep, that's absolutely right. Yep.
Too many people just settle when the sky is not the limit. In fact, it's so much more than that. You know, I once was asked if the cup was half full or half empty, and I said, well, of course it's half full. And somebody suggested to me that perhaps I might consider that it's overflowing. And I said, well, I guess that's true. And then they said, perhaps you need a larger vessel. So, you know.
But I think that's what we are all trying to make ourselves be, as a larger vessel for the amazing things that are out there.
Absolutely. So you've had some amazing things happen to your vessel lately.
Yes, I have. Absolutely have. I have moved back to Minnesota. I've been helping my brother run the farm here, and that has been a very interesting experience. I grew up on the farm, of course, but farming has changed dramatically in the last 50 years, and it's quite a different thing right now.
I can only imagine. Now, what kind of farm is it? Dairy farm?
Well, no, I grew up on a dairy farm, but my brother moved into beef, and that's mainly what he raises now. And that's pretty good business at the moment.
I'm sure it is. Do you? I guess I like beef. I eat it. I want to become a vegetarian, and that's going to be a real challenge for me. I don't like the idea of slaughtering mammals.
Yeah, I understand that. Yep.
I don't mind slaughtering fowl or eating fish, but I think that a lot of my friends who are vegetarians are on to something, and I like to think that someday we'll live in a kinder, gentler world all the way around and perhaps go in that direction. What are your inclinations?
No, I would agree with that. I've always enjoyed eating meat, and, I try to be as grateful to the animals and for that enjoyment as I can be. But I agree with you. I think that, it's important to move in a different direction. I do agree with that.
Well, I think our Native American brothers had the right idea when they paid great reverence and expressed gratitude to the creatures like the buffalo they killed and consumed for their food. So many people just seem to take it for granted and don't think twice about the fact that an animal's given their life to help sustain their life. And that, to me, is wrong.
Right. I agree with that. I agree. Yeah.
Or at least not spiritual. Yeah.
No, it's not. I can only imagine how appalled the Indians must have been when, we just slaughtered the buffalo and they left them laying there and took the hides. And,
I'm sure they were appalled.
Devastated.
Well, I think that there's so many ways we can open the doors to our spirits. Have you discovered any new ways for yourself since we last talked?
Well, no. I just been kind of trying to enhance what I already think I understand, and I always like you mentioned there, keep an open mind. None of us have all of the truth, that's for sure.
No, that's true. That's true. There's a real enigma going on, though, and there's a part of me that clings to the idea that I can become fully illuminated. And I believe Jesus, as an ascended master in this life, was right on. There's not a single thing that he said that I disagreed with from what I've gleaned from his teachings. Not to say that a lot of things haven't been misinterpreted along the way. And then I am very fond of some of the other masters like Buddha and Allah and great prophets and poets and so on and so forth. So I think that there's a possibility that we can tap into those larger truths, but to live in that truth, that's a challenge.
Yeah, right. Understanding and living it are two different things. And, I try to do both. And I try to, treat myself the way I would like others to be, to treat me. And I try to treat them the same way. And I think that's probably the most basic thing that any of us can try to do.
Absolutely. I maintain that if only we adhere to the golden rule and do unto others as we'd have them do unto us, that we wouldn't need the Ten Commandments. What do you think about that?
No, I would agree with that. And, and you were mentioning, the words of Jesus. And I think if you just really read the words of Jesus, there is so much that you can, to think about. And, one of the things that I think is misinterpreted that he is said to have said, or that's attributed to him, is that, I am the way, the truth, and the life. no one comes unto the Father but by me. And I think what he was doing there was claiming his own divinity and you know, and assuming responsibility for his life. And I think that he was telling us basically that that's what we have to do as well.
Well, to me, I am is the statement for God.
Yep.
And I liked what you said about him claiming his divinity, because in a sense, we are all God. We're all reflections of God. And when we say I am something, we need to be sure we're attaching something positive to it that's God-like in quality, or else we're disaffirming ourselves and diminishing our own divinity. So I totally agree with you that that's been misinterpreted, that, you know, it's his way or the highway, and that he was simply saying that God is the way to salvation.
Yeah, and God is in him. It's his responsibility to bring that forth in, you know, into our world, into the physical world that we're currently in. And it's the same for all of us. You know, we are all children of God. I think that's, you know, the Christian faith, like most religions, you know, have great elements of truth in them, but they have contradictions. I mean, and that's one of them, I think. I mean, the Christian faith asserts that Jesus is the only Son of God, and yet in many places in the Bible, you will read where it says that we are all children of God. And,
that's right. I think that religion has been one of the greatest perpetrators of evil in the world, and that it's so important to take everything with a grain of salt. I mean, look at the things that have been done and the atrocities that have been committed in the name of Jesus or Christianity. He would be absolutely appalled at some of the atrocities.
I'm sure that he is absolutely, you know, appalled at them, because, you know, I have no doubt that he is aware of what's happening. But I think, you know, it's just like, you know, one of the teachings of most religions really is that God loves us unconditionally no matter what we do. And
I think
that that's true, you know.
Which makes us beloved children of God. I don't believe God recognizes sin. The church that I attend, Unity Church, says that the original meaning of sin in Aramaic was missing the mark. And so often we ascribe the notion of shame to sin. And thereby we're judging ourselves. And, you know, God does not judge us. We are the ones that judge ourselves.
Yeah.
I don't believe there's any day of judgment or reckoning other than what we do to ourselves. What do you think?
No, I absolutely believe that. Yes, I absolutely believe God. You know, God does not judge. God does not punish. And you know, God. I think God can be disappointed. I think that he can. But,
sure.
You know, but that is not going to diminish the love that's there
no.
for us. From that source.
How do you handle people that judge other people or take a stand based on their religion and say that someone is a sinner because they're not a follower of Jesus or because they are gay or something like that? How do you deal with a person like that, because you're not about to change their mind. It's like trying to win a fight with the devil. Arguments do no good.
Right. Now, you know, it certainly varies with who that person is. If it's somebody that I don't know that well, or if it's somebody that I know I'm not going to be able to communicate with, I usually don't say much of anything. Now, there are some people that I know that that have, you know, those beliefs, and I'm able to talk to them, and I might just come out and say, you know, some of the things that I believe, and they will say the things that they believe, and we just go on being friends. And I don't know if either one of us have made any changes in how the other person thinks, but maybe we have. I mean, I just kind of actually had that for very good friends the other day, and you know, to me, the idea the two ideas that that God, first of all, you know, is all knowing and all loving, which I believe that God is all loving. I'm not sure, you know, about the all knowing part. That's kind of hard to say, but I believe that God has infinite love for all of us. And then to think that that same God would, you know, put me into an eternal state of torment simply because I cannot come to believe in what I believe is an irrational belief. Those two ideas are just simply contradictory. I mean, they don't make sense. They don't mesh. They're just not there. And yet, you know, there are millions and millions of people who do believe both of those things. And
yes.
You know, if I'm, I just, and I think that's a problem. You know, because
yes,
how
is.
Can you believe?
I do too.
Yeah,
I do too. What's worked for me, you use the word sense. What's worked for me is to use common sense and keep things simple. Now, certainly there are many mysteries in life and paradoxes. But when it comes to spiritual truths, I believe that they're plain and simple. And I believe that wisdom can actually be taught, and that for whatever reason, somewhere along the line, people seem to think they need to gain wisdom through the school of hard knocks. And I am writing a book called Awaken to Your Spirit, which is basically a spiritual primer that teaches the ABCs of spirituality and how to do things like heal yourself, how to connect to God and stay present to the moment, how to be true to yourself, and so on and so forth. And it really is very simple for me. I think the bottom line is that I follow my joy and do no harm. And when I do that, I'm in a place where I am just doing what I believe God wants for all of his children to do, and that's to have a happy, healthy life. And in so doing, God seems to reveal to me the pathway to my joy, which is increased as I give to others from my joy, of my possessions, of my time and treasures and talents, and that multiplies my joy. And so it goes, and I'm careful to count my blessings each step of the way. I think gratitude is an important key to the kingdom.
I absolutely agree with that. And I think that's the key, you know, and a lot of people have a hard time finding that, and some people never do in this lifetime. Doesn't mean that they won't in some lifetime, but a lot of people don't in this lifetime.
There, that's interesting, Ken. You believe in reincarnation, eh?
I do. Yes, I do believe in that. I don't say that I understand it. I don't think that a lot of what we hear it is from different sources is necessarily the way it is. But I believe that we live many, many lives and many, 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 many spheres, if that's what you want to call them. And this
I
is
do
one
too,
of them.
And it only makes sense because life is seemingly not fair, that God would give us another chance to get it right, so to speak. I believe in the law of cause and effect or karma, and that what goes around comes around. I am aware of about 15 lifetimes, some quite significant, and many of them quite spiritually connected to source, God, universe, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I have been regressed by a couple of people. I have a past life regressionist by the name of Mary Lou McIntyre, who you can find at MaryLouMcIntyre.com. Yeah, do you know
Mary
her?
Mary Lou McIntyre. I don't know her, and I have never read any of her books, but I listened to an interview that she was doing with somebody one time, and I just loved the way she was talking. But the reason
she's
I
great.
Did is because of the title of her book, and I just love the title of her book. One of the books she's written, and that you probably maybe are aware of it, is Life is Forever, Get Used to It.
Yes. Oh, yes. Well, tune in on October 6th. She's going to be on my show. And if you hang in there just a minute, I'm going to my website and I'll tell you the time of the show. She regresses people for free. She's taken me to two lives in Egypt, where in one of them I was a priest. And absolutely amazing. I could see the temple. I could see the pyramids, the Sphinx. Uh-huh. It's going to be at 7 o'clock on October 6th, and she is a monthly regular on my show and an amazing woman who, for free, will regress you. She reads the Akashic Records. She's been given that gift, and it's like she opens a book. She'll ask you what it is that you need to know for your life now, and she takes you to a life where you had a similar challenge that wasn't overcome. And, you know, in so doing, what happens is if you can see where you erred before, it almost clears up the pathway in this life. So it's pretty amazing how it works. You know, you and anybody else that wants to can call in and get a reading from her, and she's absolutely wonderful. And I have a visionary by the name of Athena Starr who can do that. Also, she can read the future. She can deal with almost any challenges. And she's going to be on October 24th at 7:30. And she's also a monthly regular. So, you know, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/AuthorDavidClark and look at my upcoming episodes if you're ever interested in calling in for some of my shows.
Well, but, yeah.
You know, what I wanted to say about reincarnation, that a lot of people don't know, and I love telling Christians who don't believe in reincarnation, such as myself, I didn't until I was 25 and had an out-of-body experience where it opened some doors, understandings. Mm-hmm. That is that the Council of Nicaea in the time of Constantine the Great struck down Jesus's teachings in reincarnation that the early Christians and Gnostics professed. Would you hold on just a minute, Ken? Can you take her? Okay. Oh, my God. Ken, I have got a cleaning lady.
No, they're taking her.
Oh, okay. Life is happening. Yes, okay. It's in
life
my...
Life is happening.
We're going to continue the show, but what's that my cleaning lady's daughter is in labor. And
oh my
she
goodness.
Has to
Oh no.
Yeah, she has to go. Tell her she'll owe me whatever, Robbie. Okay, she owes me an hour. Okay. Okay, life is happening. A new life is about to begin, and
wow,
my granddaughter's
terrific.
Yep. So that's great, and I was supposed to take her to buy a stroller and car seat because she needs that to come home from the hospital. Robbie, would you let her know I'll take her to Target tomorrow? Okay, thank you. So the poor woman is a very spiritual person who's had a really hard life and is stuck in what I would call poverty consciousness. And she continues to struggle, and I've been trying to help her open the door to the realization that as a beloved child of God, she's entitled to abundance. And for so many people that continue to struggle for whatever reason, and money seems to be a big one for a lot of folks, and people just need to let go of the struggle and to be what they have. And then what happens, because I had this issue in my past, is that more things to be grateful come your way. And as you let go of worry and fixation on lack, then plenty seems to come your way. At least that's been my experience.
Right.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just saying, I think that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, but anyhow, what do you think about, were you aware of the Council of Nicaea?
No. Oh, wait a minute, Council, I mean, you're talking about in the 300s when they decided what books
right
were
around
in the
there,
Bible?
300s, 400s,
yeah.
And you can Google it and find out what they did to the Bible, because they they left out certain gospels, like the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Judas, and some others.
Yeah,
you know.
they picked and chose what ones that they figured they could use to control people. I mean,
there you go. That's exactly it. And how did they control people, Ken?
Well, by through fear, mostly. I mean, that's...
There you go. Now, that's another thing that's interesting, because when I look at the Bible, what I use as a barometer for truth is what speaks to me of faith or love and what speaks to me of fear. And whatever speaks to me of fear is a lie, and it's almost what I would call evil, you know?
I would totally agree with that. And the Bible is, regardless of what some people might say, is filled with contradictions. And you know, if you're going to believe everything that's in the Bible, that means that you are believing ideas that are totally, you know, mutually exclusive of each other. And I think that creates problems, not only on an individual level, but then leads to a societal level and a global level.
Well, it also was written at a particular point in time, and it's quite based on traditions back then. And I maintain the Bible still being written by other visionaries, because let's face it, prophets didn't just exist in times of old. They're still here today, and you and I are prophets, as I see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, for those people that closed their minds, I guess I feel sorry for them, because they're missing out on certain possibilities through their limited thinking and blinders, and that's unfortunate. But it seems to be one of the mysteries, and I believe that until people open the doors to greater understandings, we're going to continue to face worldwide problems like war, and that what we need to do is to envision things like peace, to let go of judgment, and to be at peace within ourselves, and to let go of fear, certainly.
Yep. No, I totally agree. I think that maybe the most fundamental reason for the problems that many of us have or that exist in the world is, you know, we're just not willing so often to honestly examine and evaluate and modify where necessary the things that we believe. And if we're not willing to do that, I mean, it's a challenge for all of us, you know. And why don't we do that? I think there are two fundamental reasons, and they're fear and pride. I mean, none of us like to admit that we were wrong about something, you know, a lot of times we are. But if we don't examine the things that we believe, you know, our understanding is not, how can it possibly evolve? It can't. It can't grow, and yet it needs to, you know.
Well, to be human is to err, and to forgive is fine. And as humans, I believe we need to take a look at our shadow sides in order to let go of them. Now, it's easy for me to take somebody else's inventory and a lot harder for me to look at myself, because I've done a lot of things in my life, and they come from all these quote-unquote defects of character, sins, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, I've got to be careful to be gentle with myself, or I'm going to beat myself to a bloody pulp. But it's just part of the human experience. And as I let go of that and affirm that I'm a child of God and claim the positive qualities that are the opposites of those defects, that's the light that I move into. And that's where my freedom comes. What do you think?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, that kind of says it all, and I totally agree with that. And,
we're on the same page.
I think we pretty much are on the same page. Life is terrific. It doesn't mean that it's all, you know, roses and sunshine all the time, but it is. I think that our most fundamental responsibility is to learn how to make it fun, you know, to learn how to enjoy it. And And we don't always succeed, but that's what we are working on. And I think the more that we realize that and the more we work on it, the more fun it becomes. And,
well, I mean, the great philosopher Joseph Campbell talked about following your bliss. And when I was a social worker, I had this elderly lady who was demented, who believed in the power of positive thinking. And she'd always ask me, what do you do for fun? And I'd think to myself, huh, she's got me. Guess what? I have fun now. And I have been led into careers that I'd never dreamed of. And I'm loving it. And I don't even mind doing the dishes anymore. And, you know, the things that I don't like to do that I used to think I had to do, like mow the lawn and clean the toilets and so on and so forth, I hire now. And I do things that are fun. And I don't worry about the money because it seems to come from source, from God. Anyhow, that's interesting. Let's talk about your writing. Now, the last time we talked about your book, God Theories, would you be willing to tell the audience what that book is about, reduce it to the least common denominator, and let's take it from there.
God Theories, I would say, is essentially something that makes a critical use of logic and reason to demonstrate important spiritual principles. In other words, I consider it a book of science, not difficult science to understand, but solid science. And it uses that science to prove what I would consider to be five important fundamental principles of truth. And
what are those?
Those are, one, first of all, none of us could have possibly come into this world as a result of chance, luck, fate, or because we live in a universe compelled to produce something and somehow simply wound up producing us. In other words, we didn't get here by chance, which basically means we got here not by chance, which involves conscious planning. So the second principle of truth is that conscious planning, and some of that had to originate outside the physical domain, must be a part of the process as to how each of us do come into this world. Now, we know that we can do conscious planning in this world to have a baby. I mean, people do that all the time, but they do not consciously plan to have a particular baby. In other words, nobody consciously planned to have you or me. That had to take place outside of the physical domain. And the third one is the essence of who we are cannot possibly depend upon the creation of a particular physical body, just a mathematical impossibility. And if that's true, that must mean then that the essence of who we are has to both precede and succeed any physical body in which we might currently find ourselves to be. And therefore, we are all in essence eternal spiritual beings.
Uh-huh.
Now, those are the five, and I will contend that the science is solid, the mathematics is solid, that proves each of those, and that basically to deny them, you can do that, but it requires a belief in an absurdity of unimaginable magnitude.
Go ahead. I'm putzing around in the kitchen.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm listening. What were you going to say next?
Well, okay. So now I will contend that the book does prove those principles. Now, if they are principles of truth, what that also means is that any other belief that anyone would have to be consistent with all five of those principles. I mean, that's one of the characteristics of a principle of truth, right? I mean, you can't be consistent with this principle and not that one. I mean, if you think about our physical laws, for example, the laws of gravity, momentum, electromagnetism, all of them, if you're going to get an airplane to fly or a train to run or a car to move or anything else, if you're going to walk down the road, you know, all of those actions need to be consistent with every single physical law that we've demonstrated to be true. I mean, you can't pick and choose which ones you're going to, you know, work with. to get any of those things to work. And I think the same thing ultimately has to be true with our spiritual, you know, our spiritual ideas. And that's, and one of the things that I do in the book is talk a little bit about, you know, classical evolution and intelligent design, because they are probably the two most visible spiritual, whatever you want to, you know, call them, that we have in our country today. I mean, they kind of go at each other with debates and try to decide which of them is right and which of them is wrong. I think both of them have ideas that are right, and both of them have ideas that are wrong. And one of the things that I do is, you know, try to point out what some of those are. And if an idea, whether it's in classical evolution or intelligent design or any religion or any other thing, will have to be consistent with all five of those principles. And classical evolution, one of their, you know, long-standing ideas is that consciousness is something that came into being with the evolution of animals. In other words, with the evolution of neural systems in animals. That's where consciousness started, and it, you know, animals get bigger brains, and it's developed into humans. But as I point out in the book, that's an absurdity. It just can't possibly have been that way. And,
right.
So it's just not consistent. Actually, that particular idea isn't consistent with any of them. So that, in a very quick summary, I guess, is sort of what my book is about.
Well, now you delve into different areas like metaphysics. Now, for those that may be familiar with the term but don't know what it is, can you define what metaphysics is?
Well, the term metaphysics means beyond physics. So,
right.
What is beyond physics? I would say what is beyond physics is the spiritual. So that is what metaphysics is about, in a nutshell.
Okay.
Metaphysics.
Go ahead.
Metaphysics includes, I would say, a lot of things like channeling. Like what you were talking about with Mary Lou McIntyre, being able to tune into the Akashic Records, and I would consider that to be a part of what metaphysics is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a body of knowledge, and I'm sure that there are many accepted beliefs from many people who consider themselves to be metaphysicians that need to be adjusted as well. You know, I don't think total truth lies in metaphysics.
I don't either.
A lot of it does. I think a lot of it does, however.
Mm-hmm. I think perhaps more so there than in some other areas that people delve into. That's my sense, right or wrong. I don't know. Now, you talked about right and wrong beliefs, and that makes sense to me. I have an issue, though, with right and wrong as we apply it to things in our life, because to me that smacks of judgment, and we get into areas where we might be saying that life, if something is wrong, then that implies that life is not good. And I believe it's all good, that there is no bad, that it all serves our spiritual evolution, and that there's no black or white, it's all the colors of the rainbow. And I see too many people that lock themselves into black and white thinking, and don't go.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Oh, no, I totally agree with that. There are very few things that are black and white. There may be, you know, there are probably some.
Well, I think you've outlined some of those. When you speak of something that resonates as truth to me, I think that's pretty black or white, depending on how you want to look at it. To me, that's concrete. I mean, for instance, just to say that God is only love, only about love, to me that resonates truth. To me, a statement that God is all-powerful resonates truth. And then the all-knowing that you were unsure of resonates truth to me, and maybe it you're unsure of that for yourself. And but well, that's I think a good starting point for a lot of people who are questioning spiritual reality is to sort through the chaff and the grain by seeing what resonates. I like to use the love barometer. I like to use positive qualities as a barometer. Now, I believe we live in a vibrational universe. How about you?
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yes,
and what does that, mean to you?
Well, what it means to me is that everything is alive. Everything is moving. You know, even you know, we know that inside of everything that appears to be solid, there is an enormous amount of motion going on in the atoms and the electrons and the protons, and they go deeper and deeper into the, you know, strings. What are strings? We're learning, you know, the most fundamental particles of whatever make up our universe are constantly vibrating. So, you know, our vocal cords are vibrating. That's how we're communicating right now. And there's vibrations that are going into the phones that we're talking into, and that vibration is being carried in one form, and probably many several forms, from this phone to your phone. No. To me, it basically means that, you know, vibration means to me life, in a nutshell. Everything is vibrating.
The first time that I heard that put forward, it was actually by a therapist that I was going to see who introduced me to Esther Hicks and Abraham. And for anybody that's not familiar with that, Esther Hicks channels, I don't know if you want to call it an entity or her higher self or whatever. I think it's her higher self, really, her oversoul, if you will. Because every single thing that Abraham says speaks of truth to me. And I learned so much about myself and life from her teachings. And it was like 1, 2, 3. I just had to listen to it 3 times and I got it. It snapped me right out of addiction. I was having a relapse with sexual addiction at the time. And, you know, this brings me to another area that I wanted to get into with you, and that is on the subject of health or healing and how that's accomplished. Now, I had Dr. Bernie Siegel on last week, and he's a cancer surgeon who's written many books, including one called Love, Medicine, and Miracles. And he's of the belief that doctors don't do the healing. It's the patient that does the healing. What do you think about that?
Oh, I definitely agree. I think that, you know, we have, each of us has the capacity to heal ourselves essentially any ailment. Now,
yes,
there are some that's hard to believe, okay? So we can do that, and so we probably won't. But I believe that ultimately the capacity is there, and no matter what it is, we could. If we just really, you know, there's probably knowledge that we should have to help us. But, no, I totally agree that it is the patient that heals themselves.
Well, anytime fear or uncertainty enters in, that deviates from moving in a positive direction. And so if I'm told that I have cancer, and that would be very scary to me, as it is to many people who might give up the ghost, so to speak, and say, oh, I'm going to die. Or you might have a doctor who say, you've got 3 months left to live, so what's there to live for? And I think Dr. Siegel would have something very different to say about that. I mean, there are people that have spontaneous remissions. I had a guest by the name of Kathleen Canavos O'Keefe, who had a double breast cancer survivor. Now, she, in her dream state, had an angel that came to her who told her she had breast cancer. She went to her doctor 3 times, and 3 times he sent her away, or 2 times he sent her away, and said, no, you don't. The tests show you don't. And finally, the angel said, tell him where it is and to do exploratory surgery. He said, I will not. And she used the words the angel said to say to him, and he agreed to do the surgery, and lo and behold, he found cancer. She had stage 4 cancer, and tests did not reveal that. Now, stage 4 cancer is generally accepted to be terminal. She healed herself. All right, she had the surgery, but it was throughout her body. And she healed herself because she did not accept a terminal diagnosis. And I think that's very important for anybody that is in that situation to hear the message that it can be done.
Yep. No, I would agree with that. And, you know, in my own life, nothing that dramatic, but I've always been active in sports, and I've loved sports. And, you know, that can take a toll on the body. And I took a massage class, I guess, about 10 years ago or so, and I haven't really done anything with it professionally, but I have used it on myself. And you know, I'm essentially free of any pain. And I used to have, you know, pain, you know, not big pains, but pains in my knee and pains in my elbow. And if I get something like that now, I know how to, you know, how to get rid of it. And I believe that while I can do it for those kinds of things, I believe intellectually that if somebody told me I had cancer, that I could cure that as well. That I could heal that. Now I would be scared, you know, and I wouldn't know what to do exactly, maybe, except try and communicate with my higher self and on other levels. But I believe that it could be done, you know.
Well, I had a couple of things in my life that I'd like to share that could have been very scary, and they didn't scare me. I was told that I had a heart condition where there was a blockage to the arterial flow into my lower left chamber, and I was sent after an abnormal stress test that bore that out. I was sent to a cardiologist who did a catheterization who was going to put a stent in. He went into me and he said, there's no problem anymore. I said, really? He said, I just didn't accept that. Yeah. And it took care of itself. Likewise, I was told I'm a smoker. Oh, yeah, I still smoke. That's my last quote-unquote addiction. And I believe addictions are simply a symptom of a further distress, because I've healed from many addictions. I don't believe that once an addict, always an addict. I'm digressing.
I'm sorry, David, I just got
to... No, I was just going to say, I had emphysema and COPD, which are, I've been told, are irreversible. I don't have them anymore, folks. They're gone.
That is incredible. I just got to say this. Smoking is something that I absolutely loved for 45 years. You know, I said about 4 years ago. I believe that I'm probably healthier because I smoked, because I knew it was bad for me. I did an awful lot of things, a lot of research and a lot of physical exercise, which I've always done. And, smoking is a terrible thing, you know, but I don't believe that it necessarily has to be what it winds up doing to so many people, and what so many people, you know, claim that it does.
Right.
You know, I mean, I run. I'm 69 now, and I run 5Ks 2-3 times a year. You know, not great, but I do these things. But a lot of these things, like I said, I do because I smoke. But I did enjoy it.
Well, I must say I still do, and it's my goal to smoke 3 cigarettes a day, which is almost hard to conceive of, because every time I've stopped smoking and started up again, I've immediately escalated to my previous habit. However, I used to drink a case of beer and sometimes a bottle a day. I stopped drinking in 1988, didn't have a drop for years, and at a commitment ceremony, my partner suggested I have a glass of champagne, and I thought, well, I'll try it. And I didn't want any more. I can have 1 to 3 drinks a day now. Yeah. I do not like feeling drunk, and it's fine, you know, absolutely fine. Now, another thing about smoking is it supposedly ages you. I'm almost 60 years old, and if you look at my picture, you wouldn't guess that I'm out of my 40s. So the only thing that's aged me has been my past sun worshiping. As a fair-skinned person, it's wrinkled me.
Yeah.
Now, smoking really wrinkles some people, but I don't buy into aging, and I'm going to be eternally young, and I plan to live to be at least 150 years old.
Yeah.
So there, you know.
There you go. Now, I hope we understand. We're not encouraging anybody to start smoking.
No. I would not. I would say, please don't pick up cigarette because they are evil. They're laced with arsenic, formaldehyde. You know, not to mention the nicotine, which is such an addictive substance. It's worse than heroin.
It's terrible. Yeah. But it's an interesting side thing that we got into all of a sudden.
I don't know how we went there, but I want to do a couple of things. I want to, and we can go a little bit longer than an hour if you're willing to hang in there, because as far as I'm concerned, as long as the conversation is scintillating, I trust that the listeners are riveted. But I recently came out with a book called Occam's Razor Revisited, A Simple Solution to Freedom from All Addictions. I'm a former drug addict, a former alcoholic, a former mentally ill, bipolar, manic depressive person, a former heart patient, a former lung patient, a cigarette addict, if you will, a former toxic relationship addict, a former depression addict. The list goes on. And I propose there is a simple solution to freedom from all addictions, and I share my story, which is going to be made into a which is being crafted into a screenplay, and I plan on starring in the movie and playing myself. But I would suggest people, if they want to look at an alternative philosophy that runs counter to current addiction theories, that they read Occam's Razor Revisited, which is available on Kindle now and is coming out in paperback and hardcover sometime this fall from Balboa Press. And you can go to Amazon.com, put in that title. You don't have to put in my name, David Clark, but, you know, you can do that too. And I have some other books. What I'd like to do now, since we've been talking about spirit, is to promote a friend of mine who is an up-and-coming New Thought musician. She's a marvelous woman who sings a song called The Light of Spirit. And we're just going to take a little break and listen to the wonderful Jennifer Fearon.
I am new. light of spirit is me.
And that's the wonderful Jennifer Fearon singing The Light of Spirit. And if you are interested in getting any of her CDs, you can go to her website, which is Jennifer Fearon, that's FEERREN.com, JenniferFearon.com, and she would be delighted to send you for a small cost one of her CDs. And as I recall, if you buy all three of them, you get a package deal. And how could any beloved child of God who accepts themselves as such disagree with a single thing she said? What do you think, Ken?
It's a beautiful song, and a beautiful voice, and a beautiful message.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things. She's filled with spirit and joy. One of the things that she talks about in the song is how the light of spirit lives as you and as me, and what I believe she's trying to say is that we're all one, all connected, unified. One with God, all unique reflections of the ultimate source of our beings, as I put forth at the end of my show. And I'd like to explore that notion a little bit and see what you have to say about physics or quantum physics and how that might bear out something along those lines.
Well... That's a tall order.
I'm putting you on the spot here.
You are.
On a train.
Yes. Well, I think that everything is ultimately spirit. Science kind of tends to say that there are two fundamental properties that make up our universe, and these are matter and energy. But I think they're wrong. And I think that there, if you want to say that there are three, then they would be consciousness, matter, and energy, I believe. But I think that consciousness is really, spirit, if that's what you want to call it, whatever you want, that mystery is the ultimate source of everything. And I think quantum physics, in its way, is getting closer and closer to that. The traditional quantum physicists, or most of the ones that are around today, wouldn't ascribe consciousness to the strings and the fundamental particles that they're studying. But a lot of the quantum physicists of an earlier period did. Rutherford and some of these other guys. When they did some of their experiments, they said, well, what's going on here? Whenever we seem to think about something, it acts a little differently. How is this? I don't know if you're familiar with Max Planck or not.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, Max Planck is sometimes considered the father of quantum physics, because he did a lot of work with... showing that energy exists in discrete states. And let's see, I think I have a quote, if I can find it. Yes, right here. If I can just read this from Max Planck. And the idea that Planck, and this is out of my book, by the way, the idea that Planck retained the belief that consciousness is something inherent in all matter is frequently supported by the following quote. I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. So that is the father of quantum physics speaking there.
Wow. I like it.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it's
pretty easy. I don't know. Do you have anything else you want to add, Ken?
Only that if anybody is interested in my book, they can get it from Amazon.com by, looking up God theories. There are, it's available there. It's also available to Ex Libris. You can go to GodTheories.com and read a little bit about it and order it from there as well. Get it from there as well. So I think that's about it. I think we've been talking for an hour at least, haven't we?
We have. We've gone just past the hour mark, and I'm feeling very complete. If you are, we could call it a wrap.
All right,
well,
great.
That's wonderful. I hope you'll come back and be on my TV show.
I'd love to. Yeah, sounds great, David, and I really appreciate it.
Well, you're welcome. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There's no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a physical, who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.
Again, Ken.
Okay, thank you, David.